And welcome to the HalfGuarded.com Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary Thomas Gilbert. It's my co-host, Danathan Ford.
We are putting on our NPR voices. And
yes.
This week in college football with Dan and Zach.
I like that. All right, but yeah, we're coming off a pretty wild weekend in college. Not really on the field. Nothing really crazy happening.
I would say it was the best weekend of the year, football-wise.
Well, it was fun. The big drama came off the field.
Okay, sure.
Because Thanksgiving night, it broke. Herman to LSU. LSU met with Coach O. He brought in a binder. I don't know what's in the binder. No one really knows what's in the binder. It flat blew LSU away. No way Herman's agent called halfway through and said we're going to Texas. Then they hired Coach O. Coach O becomes your coach at LSU. Texas finally fires Charlie Strong. Herman goes to Texas.
God, LSU's own version of events on how that all went down is so embarrassing that it makes me think it's even worse. Because their version is that, like, they had a deal with Tom Herman. It was all agreed. Then Tom Herman's people called up Oliva and said, well, let's hear what Texas has to say. And then Oliva went, fine, you listen to them. I got a coach. Which is like, all right, Bo, like, calm down. Like, this is big shit here.
But you know what?
Why are you acting like a coked out 80s producer when you're trying to hire a coach? Like, this is crazy.
But I don't hate the hire for LSU. Like, some people are kind of shit on it. Hey, I like Coach O. I'm just happy to have him around. B, Herman LSU would have been really bad for me as an Auburn fan. But C, this is the most important reason I like it. It kind of opens up what I like to call the Ronald Reagan strategy, where your figurehead, your head coach, is just a guy who's good at PR, is good at talking, people like him. But then you surround him with geniuses behind, kind of pulling the strings, making the program work. And if they can spend the money they saved by hiring a Coach O and go get Lane Kiffin, it's kind of a win for LSU, I'd argue, to get a coordinator as good as Lane Kiffin is. He's a pretty solid offensive coordinator. So I don't hate it, Dan. What do you think?
I think it is the most sensible financial decision to make because you're going to be able to hang on to all of your assistant coaches. We learned today that Dave Aranda is going to be staying as the defensive coordinator. That's good. It looks like Lane Kiffin is going to, as you mentioned, Lane Kiffin is going to be the offensive coordinator. Their quarterback's coach, who's been serving as interim offensive coordinator, done a pretty good job. He's willing to stay and be, you know, and stay as a coordinator, you know. So I think it just makes a lot of sense from a financial perspective. And if you look at it and you go, we like our assistants, we think we got good ones, you know, why would you necessarily want to move on? Basically, if you're a person at LSU who thought, God dang it, we're a good team. Why won't Les just change the offense a little bit? It's like, well, you basically have Les Miles with a better offense. Isn't that what you wanted?
Yeah,
let's stick with it.
And LSU could have fucked this up so much worse, but they didn't. And, yeah, you don't get Herman, but Herman didn't want the job.
And Jimbo didn't want the job.
And those were necessarily, like, at least you know Coach O's working with the program. He's kind of beloved in Baton Rouge. I mean, some people say he plays the PR game, but that's part of being a head coach.
Right.
You could have messed this up a lot worse. And
The reality is you cannot get a coach who's already sitting at a major job to switch jobs in this world. Because everybody's making money. And every conference is looking at it like, well, I don't need to go to the SEC to win. I'm in the ACC. I'm doing fine. You know, no, there's no coach who's sitting in the Big 12 going, well, Big 12, they could have got Mike Gundy, but he's pissy with his administration. But it's not like Bob Stoops is sitting at Oklahoma going, God, I just got to get to LSU or else I'm dead. Like, it don't work that way anymore. Everybody's making money.
To be fair, a lot of those coaches
are happy with their situations.
A lot of those coaches have won national championships or been pretty close. If I'm at, say, Kansas and Ole Miss came calling and Ole Miss is clean, sure. Ole Miss will never be clean, so that's a bad scenario. But if Mississippi State But if Ole Miss has sanctions and Mississippi State came calling, I'd probably listen. If I'm at Kansas or even
if they wanted
West Virginia,
they would have gotten him. If they had wanted Dan Mullen, they would have gotten him. It's just like, is Dan Mullen really that better of an option than Ed Orgeron and coaching continuity? I don't know.
No, you know, I love the fit.
I would say the best coach out there to hire right now is Willie Taggart. But it's like, Willie Taggart's first 2 years at South Florida were really rough. He's not like money in the bank.
Yeah.
So it's like, well.
I'm never going to remember his name, but I still love Western Michigan's coach. That's my guy.
PJ Fleck.
Especially if I'm a program who can't recruit necessarily as well. He's the coach. Like I said, that's why I love Middle Oregon. I think that fit just makes sense.
And that's sounding like that's the way it's going to end up going.
Yeah. That's because you heard it here first on the breaking news. Yep. We broke that story first. But let's move on. We've talked LSU.
The only thing that worries me about PJ Fleck is how many coaches have come from the MAC and then flamed out.
Yeah, so but there's always room for the first one. Some people forget that. The more something doesn't happen, the more likely it is to happen at some point. That's a little stats for you.
Sure.
But let's move on to Herman to Texas. I mean, Texas, you got to think they're a favorite to maybe win the conference next year for sure. And maybe a playoff team potentially. Like, I think a lot of people felt the talent was there for Texas next year. They would make the leap. But you got to think first year coach, he's got the talent around him. Does Texas make the leap or is Stoops getting his way again? Or in his way for the first time?
They've got a lot of talent there and. For whatever reason, Charlie Strong couldn't make it work, but they got a lot of really good players there. It would not shock me at all.
We'll talk about Texas more as we kind of see how what's kind of happening, recruits, how the staff comes together. But where does Charlie Strong go now? Who is he going to be defensive coordinator somewhere? Is he going to sit out a year? What are you doing?
I don't see him wanting a coordinator job because he worked so long to get a head coaching job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see him wanting to go back down to coordinator. I know every SEC team thinks he's going to be their coordinator next year. But
no.
I see him being more interested in the Cincinnati job.
Mm-hmm.
Because, basically that's the same. Cincinnati and Louisville are maybe an hour from each other. So that would be a place where he could go back to and basically be back where he was and rebuild himself pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah. And also, Cincinnati is a great line of sitting head coaches to do nothing at bigger schools.
Personally, he's not going to get it because they're bringing Doran back, but God, I want him at NC State so bad.
I kind of was he with Dan Quinn at Florida, the Falcons coach?
Quinn was there at the same time as him.
See Strong maybe cashing in a favor and doing something weird with an NFL team for maybe a year while he sits out and reevaluates.
I think Quinn came after him.
Okay. Maybe not the Falcons, but something I could see maybe Charlie Strong landing in on an NFL team for the rest of the year, maybe part of the year next year. I don't see Strong jumping into a head coaching gig right away. I think he sits out a year and reevaluates.
I think he's going to want a head coaching job as soon as possible to prove that he's as good as his reputation was before Texas. Yeah. I think he is not going to take one step outside of the Southeast. I think he's going to be like, never again am I ever going to go anywhere other than the Southeast. Because holy shit.
Yeah.
The big thing that screwed him.
But that was the big off-the-field kind of news over the weekend. We still have more issues with Notre Dame, but it looks like, Kelly probably going to get at least another year. Unless he does something else really dumb.
Financially, it just doesn't make sense. They don't have any other options, basically.
Yeah. But there's some action on the field. I believe so, Dan. Friday. Thursday, there was LSU beat the dog piss out of A&M. Friday, we got the Apple Cup.
Sumlin's another guy who should be fired, and they don't have the money to.
Yeah, Sumlin will stick it around another year, I think. But yeah, we get to Friday Apple Cup. Friday was a fun day. For anything else on Friday that kind of caught your fancy, Dan?
Well, obviously, my beloved NC State University, my alma mater, You know, we're the red and white state, and we know we are the best. A hand behind our back, and we can take on all the rest. Go to hell, Caroline. Devils in the extended line. The red and white from NC State. Go State. We beat the shit out of that Carolina team. Don't pay attention to the fact they came back. We had a beat, baby. We whipped them.
Do not Dan, look at the who picked NC State last week to at least beat the spread?
My anti-jinxing plan worked to perfection.
All right, but we had kind of that was kind of surprising though, because did UNC have a shot to go to the ACC title game, or did I hear something wrong there?
They had a chance. Virginia Tech had to lose to Virginia, and oh boy, did that not happen!
Yeah,
Virginia Tech, I think, still scoring touchdowns on Virginia as we speak. But if Virginia Tech had lost, yeah, and they had beat State, they would have won the Coastal. They had a shot at it, and then NC State just ran off to a 21-0 lead, and they had to play catch up the rest of the way. And
all right, we're back here. Little technical issues there at the Power Hour, but we've got everything running again. But let's move on to Saturday, Dan, and let's kind of talk about what I felt was the biggest game of the day, and that was Georgia Tech. And Tech really, they whipped that ass. Very much, you know. Yeah. How do you feel about this for Tech going forward with Paul Johnson getting the first of many of multiple wins over Kirby Smart?
I think it set the tone for this coaching relationship. You know, these two guys. Mm-hmm. Georgia didn't have a lot of answers for that Georgia Tech flex bone. And is it possible that Eason is already going to be our next Hackenberg? Can we already start penciling him in? Can we already start making him a suit for his moon trips?
Because he gave
me some Hackenberg vibes.
So, well, here's some of my issues with your criticism of Eason. I don't love the receivers around Eason. Even good Godwin's a good receiver, but I don't necessarily love it too much. But he throws a really good deep ball, and there's something maybe that's the NFL,
baby.
And that's the NFL
he throws
in me.
A great deep ball. Boy, okay. Let me tell you all about Christian Hackenberg's deep ball.
I know, but there was one ball particularly through in the Auburn game where I remember thinking that looked like a throw from an NFL quarterback, and he's 18, 19 years old right now. I want to give Eason another year before I start anointing him as bad as Hackenberg. I think there's a lot of talent with Eason. My thing that's going to hold him back is he doesn't have a good – I mean, he doesn't have Mark Richt around him, and if Mark Richt was there, I'd really like Eason's future, but not with Kirby Smart and his crew.
Here's the problem with Eason. He just played one of the worst pass defenses in the country and threw for like 130 yards and threw the interception that lost the game. So if you can't put up numbers on this Georgia Tech defense, you probably ain't that good. And if you're that inaccurate, I don't know how you fix it. With age, like, that's one of those things where it's like either you can throw a pass accurately or you can't.
Well, and if you can't, to be fair to Eason, though, he did have some pressure. Like, I think once he gets used to the speed and gets a little bit better O-line in front of him, he's so young. That's my issue with Eason right now.
I can't go ahead and put him in Hackenberg territory, but he's put himself into running. His name is on a list to follow.
Give me another year or two of Eason before I really make a judgment, because he's just a kid. But what does this kind of mean for
Tech?
He's not
very good at playing quarterback.
Well, we'll see. We'll see, Dan.
He's a bad quarterback. He is a bad quarterback right now.
I leave it open to
the idea that one day he might be a good quarterback. But in 2016, in the year of our Lord, he ain't worth a flying shit.
No, but I think there's a lot of potential. There are flashes of what could be a good quarterback with the right coaching staff, but I just don't think it's there at Georgia. But back to Georgia Tech, what does this win mean for Paul Johnson? And what looked like a kind of a lost season, if you're going back to October? What does this mean?
They saved their season. Like, basically, this was a season that was going way off the rails. They look like they were going to, you know, this could be – this is the story of Paul Johnson, though. Like, every time it looks like, oh, man, it might be time to call this whole flexbone thing. Might be time to call this a quits. And then they run off, like, three or four wins in a row, finish with eight wins, beat Georgia. They'll probably win their bowl game, and everybody's going to be like, huh, Wiley Paul Johnson still got it, huh? That offense still works.
No, and I think he's doing the best he can do at Tech with that budget and who he can hire for his staff and what she can do to get recruits. But he's just, I mean, the ACC is a down year. That's a team I like to do very well in down years for the ACC. He can win a championship every 5 years, probably.
If he had anything resembling a defense, he would have ACC championships on every finger.
Yeah.
Like, he would have 5 ACC championships already if he had any kind of defense. So if they ever just, like, luck into a young coordinator before he moves on somewhere else to get paid,
yeah,
like, that Georgia Tech's going to win some ball games.
All right, so, but moving forward, do you like, which program's future do you kind of like better? And I think we're going to lean one way, and it feels kind of weird because they don't have the money or really the resources. But I kind of like Tech going forward over the next 4 to 5 years, more so than Georgia. Yeah.
Kirby Smart is going to set that program back a long ways. Like, they're screwed. Like, you just bought a lemon, guys, and you're going to have to live with the fact you fired the winningest coach in program history to hire one of the worst coaches in the SEC. No. And that brings up something I talked to you about this weekend. Who was the last good hire in the SEC?
And that was clearly Will Muschamp at South Carolina. It was a good hire for South Carolina. Yeah, I don't hate that hire there.
I mean,
I don't hate it.
I would not call that a good hire. I wouldn't call it a terrible hire. But when you hire one of the worst coaches in the history of Florida, I don't think you can put that down as a win, even if you're South Carolina.
I'm going to come off biased, but I don't hate Malzahn at Auburn so far. I think you'd look at that and you think that's a pretty decent hire.
I would say the most recent good hire they've made is probably Hugh Freeze, which is after Malzahn. Yeah. I would definitely say Malzahn was a great hire. Maybe Brett Bielema to Arkansas, because what the fuck is Arkansas going to do? Like, who are they going to get there?
Yeah.
So that's probably Mullen. Like,
who was the, you know, Dan? Here's Mullen's, a better question.
Mullen was a while ago. Mullen was slam. Mullen was probably the biggest home run any program in the SEC has hired, other than you could argue Alabama and Saban. But Dan Mullen is the best hire anybody's made.
Let's dive deeper in the SEC East. Really, only one program has made pretty decent coaching hires, and that's Vanderbilt in the past, I'd say, 10, you know, 10 years. Not 10, but, you know, in the past 5 to 6, very least.
Mark Stoops is looking like less of a disaster at Kentucky, so maybe that'll turn out okay. But, James Franklin was a better hire than – James Franklin did really well at Vanderbilt. So yeah. I would have to say he was a better hire if we're going back 10 years. But yeah, Vanderbilt is the only SEC team who has hired back-to-back good hires in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Like, everybody else who's made one good hire screwed up before that.
One final note on this Georgia Tech game before we jump to games that matter. Georgia had been practicing to play Georgia Tech since the spring. They've been getting ready for this flex bone for a while now and still look baffled on Saturday.
They brought in Brian Van Gorder as a consultant just to give them that little bit extra, just to give them that little bit of extra help, because he coached at Notre Dame and they played Navy every year.
Yeah. He did coach at Georgia. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a longtime friend of, you know, various people there.
Yada yada.
And it still didn't matter.
But let's move on to a game that mattered. Ohio State, Michigan.
Some would call that the Power Hour Bowl. I mean, yes. I know a lot of people call it the game and all, but to me, it's going to be the Power Hour Bowl.
And all season, you and me back and forth. And I swore up and down Ohio State would win. You laughed at me, Dan. Acted like I was an idiot. No, Dan, you acted like I was an idiot. You said, you fool. I think at one point you came to my house and slapped my dad in the face. Sure. But I was right.
Well, were you? Because here's the thing. One, I did say I pick Ohio State because Michigan's quarterback's injured.
Well, you said if Michigan's quarterback doesn't play, and Michigan's – but he did play.
He was clearly hurting.
But he played. You didn't say that, Dan. You said if he played.
But he was injured. And two,
well, I mean,
Michigan was clearly the better team and just choked it away. Like, that game result was perfect in the sense that we both get to act like we were right. Because, yeah, Michigan is better than them, and Ohio State won it because Michigan gave them the game.
Well, and what came down to me is something I preached all year, Dan. And that was Ohio State was earning those grit coins. They were gritting out wins. They were learning how to win in situations where they messed up. No, Michigan never really had these problems all year. They blew everybody out. Ohio State just went through a little more adversity. And that doesn't show up with your numbers and your Football Outsiders. But that kind of matters.
I mean,
gain a lot of experience when your back is against the wall.
The number stuff ended up being completely true because Michigan's defense completely annihilated Ohio State. Like, Ohio State had 100 yards through 3.5 quarters.
Yeah.
Like, but Michigan's Ohio defense State was every bit as great. Michigan offense lost the game. Not the defense.
And Michigan played a good game, but to be fair,
the offense choked their balls off.
Yeah. But I think being in situations where your back is up against the wall does kind of pay off more when you're rather than blowing everybody out all season. I would be more concerned about Alabama because of this, but they did kind of come back versus Ole Miss, so they did fuck up and made things work.
If I'm Alabama, of all the teams that are currently in the playoffs as of today, Ohio State's the one I want to play because they can't throw for nothing. Alabama, I'm afraid of Washington. I'm afraid of Clemson because they can throw. Ohio State, I'm laughing at because JT Barrett's terrible.
Yeah. I don't even like Ohio State. I mean, let's talk about the playoff rankings because we are talking about Ohio State, Michigan. One was Alabama. Two, surprising, Ohio State. Three, Clemson. Four, Washington. And if everything should hold true, I don't like Ohio State to get out of the first round. I think Clemson beats Ohio State.
I think Ohio State may be able to beat Washington because they may be able to just out-muscle them up front.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I would pick Clemson or Alabama over Ohio State. I mean, it's all going to matter. Yeah. The seeding is going to decide everything. And personally, I'm still a little surprised that Ohio State seems like they're going to get in over the champion of their own conference. That's really weird to me. I feel like that would be a terrible mistake by the playoff committee. I think they're going to end up regretting that massively. I think that's one of the things. Like, if you start talking about why college football might one day lose popularity, it's when you start making things like conference championships not matter. You know, I think that's how you could end up in that situation.
I think this is how we end up with an 18 playoff.
And that would be a terrible mistake. Like, an 18 playoff would be a disaster.
Yeah, I think 16, if you're going to expand it, would be the
I think the four fair. Is perfect. It just You just should only pick conference champions.
I don't know why they're making this
more complicated.
It feels like this year six would work. And I wouldn't hate six. One and two get a bye. It wouldn't be the worst.
It's getting too complicated at that point.
There's
never been in the history of college football has there been a situation where you had six teams who were legitimately deserving.
But
March Madness works for that sport. It doesn't work for football.
No, and
because football, like, you need to care about every week of the regular season.
Yeah.
And if you start getting these large playoffs, like, well, then why give a shit about the regular season? Why watch? Why would any Ohio State fan tune in to see Penn State, Michigan State after that game was, after their game was over? They did it because it's like, well, shit, we need Michigan State to win so we can win our conference. If you start making the conference not matter, then why are people going to watch that stuff? Why is anybody going to care?
I think that's fair. I just wouldn't hate a 16 playoff. Because then you get more conference champ. I think you get the Big Five, and then you get one outsider, your wild card, if you will, in there. I think that's the fairest way.
I don't think they do it that way. I mean, we're seeing they don't care. They're putting in, like, they're retrofitting it so that they can get the team they think is the best, and they're going to come up with whatever rhetorical argument in their little room, not based on anything that happened in a game. Well, I think Ohio State's better. It's like, well, you do? Why? Like, what evidence do you have? Well, like, I have my football eye. It's like, okay.
Well,
great. Ohio State's getting in over a team that beat them, Penn State.
But do we really hate Penn State not being in? Like, it's from a non-football, like just Penn State in general, like, I don't really want them in my college football playoffs.
I mean, we can't.
I mean, this team, in my opinion, Penn State should have gotten a death penalty. This is not a team know. I don't want to watch Penn State be successful. I think there are a lot of people who feel that way. So I'm not going to cry for Penn State. I'll cry for Wisconsin if they beat Penn State.
I think we're going down a bad road. I think this is all just a bad road for the future of this sport.
Well, I think it sets up for the dream SEC top four teams in the playoffs. I think that's what everyone wants.
And it annoys me, and I'm not surprised, but it does annoy me how all of these Ohio State fans, and the Ohio State fan base was like the number one fan base because Ohio State was the best team in the Big Ten for all those years. Who would be like, no, dude, you gotta have the conference champion in there or else it just doesn't matter, dude. And, you know, because they were winning the conference every year and the Big Ten was so shitty that they had to, like, rely on the conference championships matter. I mean, they did this even just, like, 2 years ago when they got in over TCU and Baylor. It's like TCU had clearly had a better season than them. But yeah. TCU didn't win their conference, and Ohio State did. So it's like, the conference matters. And now here they are going, well, we all know we're better, right? And it's like, you just did the opposite argument like 2 years ago. You same people. What the
are
hell?
Are you saying Ohio State fans may be a little annoying? Dan, is that?
There's one good one, and he's been on this show. The rest of them. And the guy, Ramsey, who runs 11 Warriors. The rest of them, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah. But was there anything else on Saturday that really kind of piqued your interest? Was there another game? There's one that we'll talk about it right now, actually. Pittsburgh-Syracuse, in what I thought was a basketball score when I first saw it.
What was the final score, Dan? That's one of the, I think it was 76-61.
I thought it was 80.
There's certain games that when they happen, like, they're not on my radar personally, and then I see the final score, I see the box score, and I go, well, watching that one. And that was that game and SMU versus Navy, where I just saw the final scores and went, well, guess I know what I'm doing Sunday.
But besides that,
it's just ridiculous. Syracuse's defense is otherworldly bad, and obviously we all know how much I feel about Pitt and their offensive coordinator. Like, we don't need to go into all the love poems I've written to Matt Canada.
There have been some lawsuits, so Dan, don't forget the restraining order. I don't want to.
But, like, when you take a great offense, coached by a great coach, and you put him on the field against a team that can't do anything defensively, some crazy stuff will happen. But then you combine it with the fact that Pitt, like, if you and me were out there throwing passes to our buddies, we could put some points up on Pitt. Like, Pitt's pass defense is rough. And you get, you know, Dina Babers running that Art Briles offense. And, oh boy, did he do some nasty things to Pitt's defense. So, that's a game that just had to be seen to be believed.
Yeah. Was there anything else from Saturday, though, that kind of piqued your fancy? If you will. Well, besides maybe USC destroying Notre Dame, which is always fun.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Notre Dame, start getting the money together so you can fire that jack wagon.
Yeah, fuck you of the week, Brian Kelly. Fuck off.
Yeah, the double barrel.
You killed a person. Fuck you of the week. Yeah, you killed a person and you tried to cover up rape and you made another one of your players feel bad for not feeling so cool about his teammates raping people. So, not big fans of you here. I'm a power hour, Brian Kelly. Come on the show. We'll just yell at you the whole time.
You're a grown-ass man who blames everything on literally everybody.
Yeah.
You're a grown-ass man who makes $4 or $5 million a year. Fucking responsible.
Not only that, Dan, a man who's supposed to be shaping young men. That's your primary goal, technically, as a college football coach. And Not really someone I'd want to send my son to. We kind of talked about this before the show. Just not a guy I love or like or respect.
Yeah, he makes it very hard. He makes it very hard to respect him. That's for sure.
Yeah. But anything else that you just kind of liked on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched on it, but like Navy SMU, Come on.
Yeah.
If you are a, if you are like, say you are trying to think of a good program to send Ken Niumatalolo to, but like, if you're Purdue, you're trying to figure out who should be your next coach, and you're not just calling Ken Niumatalolo over and over again and begging him to come coach you, what the fuck are you doing?
You're going to get less Miles.
Fuck no. I would take Niumatalolo over Les Miles every day.
I would too, especially at Purdue. Yeah.
At Purdue? Oh, come on.
Yeah. No, that's what I'd take him all day at Purdue over Les. Les Miles at Purdue would be a disaster. We're talking average, maybe 6 wins is your best season.
Yeah. He will be a total disaster at Purdue if they have. But it's like, Navy hasn't punted in Navy has punted twice in 5 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, that's ridiculous.
No, and we'll get to Navy.
I don't want
to
hear I don't want to hear about how that offense can't work in our league. It's like, well, if you're Purdue, no offense you've tried has worked since, you know, like 10 years ago, since Curtis Painter graduated. So maybe you need to give something else a shot.
But let's touch on it for a second. There's no really reason to talk about it, but the Iron Bowl did happen Saturday. And
it did. I was going to let you bring that up. I didn't want to force you to.
It was your typical Iron Bowl. It's just Bama was better than Auburn, but Auburn played hard, but the offense just wasn't there, especially quarterback. If you're an Auburn fan like me, I think you can't be mad about this year, because Auburn was supposed to be near dead last in the West, and we'll finish as second in the West, and we might get a Sugar Bowl appearance.
Yeah, you were picked to fire the coach. You know, Gus Malzahn was on every single hot seat watch going into the season. Yeah.
So I think, if you kind of look at the two winners in the South this year at programs, they kind of run kind of weird gimmicky system-y different offenses. Malzahn and Paul Johnson kind of made things work. Paul Johnson beat his biggest rival, but Alabama's a little bit better than Georgia.
I mean, Alabama's
not that
a lot better
Auburn
than
could beat
Georgia.
Georgia.
So
Yeah. Not that Auburn beat Georgia, but
lose to Georgia this year. That is the low point of the season.
Yes, and but if I'm Auburn looking forward, I think your quarterback position does get better. There are some freshmen that were redshirted this year that look good. Sean White was serviceable, especially in an offense that can run the ball so well. So when he's healthy, Auburn's season probably goes different if he was healthy for that Georgia game. And then you just never know what might have happened in the Iron Bowl if it's for the SEC West title. Good job by Alabama, and just Auburn couldn't take advantage of mistakes. And Alabama shut down Auburn's run when they had to because they knew they couldn't throw. So.
Yeah, it's just Auburn's in a weird place, because when they first hired Gus Malzahn, he was like the Nick Saban killer, because Nick Saban was so bad at dealing with tempo. And now, Alabama's adjusted. They're basically running Gus Malzahn's offense themselves.
Yeah.
And that offense isn't quite the same, Saban killer that it used to be. And, the pattern we've now settled into with Nick Saban is that if you throw the ball on him, if you've got a good passer and you run up tempo, you can put a lot of points on Alabama and beat him. But if you just want to run the ball every play, he's going to gobble you up.
No, I think one of the best ways to still beat Saban, though, is to beat just about any really good defensive coach, and that's going to be like an athletic quarterback, because you saw Deshaun Watson gave him fits last year. Yeah.
Who can throw?
Oh, that's the important.
It's not enough to just be athletic against Nick Saban anymore. You've got to be able to throw the ball.
He
has downloaded the option offenses a little bit better.
No,
you've got to make him pay.
And I think, especially with Alabama's recent success and allowing his offense to get changed, it really does show why Saban will go down as one of the greatest college football coaches ever, because he can adapt to different eras. And that's something a lot of coaches couldn't really do that well.
I do. I don't want Alabama fans to hear this and get a die of massive erections, but the biggest comparison would be what? Bear Bryant switching to the wishbone?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest comparison I can think of, because like Bear Bryant had spent years running more of a pro style passing attack, Blanton Collier passing attack at Kentucky and early at Alabama. You had Joe Namath and Kenny Stabler, they had all those NFL quarterbacks, and then they have a bad year, and then he goes, you know what, God damn it, we're running a wishbone, and it worked. You know, yeah. I mean, that's the closest thing I can compare it to.
But that's kind of it for a Saturday weekend recap. Nothing, you know.
Ohio State Michigan wasn't. I do want to mention that, like, Mark Helfrich got himself fired at Oregon.
Yeah,
like, that's the one thing we did learn that Oregon will fire you for. Finally, like, we wondered what will cause Oregon to fire a coach because they haven't done it since 1976. But getting your ass beat by Oregon State and finishing 4-8, yep, that'll do it.
Yep, unacceptable. But let's move on to next week. And me and Wes, actually, before we move on to next week, let's go to the NFL Roundup with West Coast Wes and myself. We recap the NFL from last week. Wes introduces a new little game. And we also preview the Pac-12 championship very end. So let's check that out now. And welcome to the Half-Guarded Power Hour NFL Roundup. This is Zachary T. Gilbert, my co-host, West Coast Wes.
Big Zach, how you doing, brother? It's good to be back. Another exciting... Hold on one second. I've got a phone call here. Let me go ahead and take this. Yeah, Jay, how's it going, buddy?
Ooh.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm right in the middle of something. Can I give you a call back in about 30 minutes? All right, perfect. Still on for dinner tomorrow? We're good. Whole Cutler clan going to be there? Great. I'll bring some... bring some gummy bears for the little ones. So give my regards to Kristen and that's very kind of her to say. That's a compliment that that never gets old. So anyhow, I'll let you go, buddy. I'll talk to you later. All right, Jay. All right.
I'm sorry
about that.
Who's that? Yeah. Who was that?
That's just a buddy of mine. Just a buddy of mine.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I told him I was a little busy right now, but he can't, you know, I get a lot of calls, a lot of texts.
I understand. Everything. Yeah.
He's down right now. He's in a bad situation. So I just had to take that. So I apologize.
Oh, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. All right. Well, that's a little rude to start off.
I know, but you know, you got to be there for your friends. So
I understand.
Again,
yeah. Did you ask him, is the minivan?
I'm sorry.
This is the friend with the minivan, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if we're talking about the same guy necessarily. Well, we'll just leave it alone, I suppose.
Okay. So,
yeah.
All right.
Let's get on
to
the NFL.
All right. NFL. Yeah. Coming off a hot Thanksgiving day of football action. I think the two early games were pretty fun, for as fun as they can be. Minnesota and Detroit playing.
Let me ask you this. Did they live up to the hype that we put out there? Because we were calling this the greatest Thanksgiving of all time football.
I can safely say I think we overhyped Thanksgiving a little bit less. I think it was not quite the showcase of the Immortals we imagined. No. But we did get a little reversal of fortune, kind of. Minnesota blew the game, not Detroit, like we all thought.
Yeah, we didn't know what to do with ourselves when that happened. I recall in real time communicating with you, and we were both kind of questioning everything that we knew based on the Lions finally winning a big game. I know they've won on Thanksgiving before, and I know they've won, quote, big games, but you never expect it. And so to have them do it and to see Minnesota drop the ball, I'm still trying to recover from that.
Yeah, that was a tough one. And then we saw Dallas finally lost to the spread, to the Redskins. Who looked pretty good in defeat.
They did.
The offense still looked like a big play offense. Like one where I'm not sleeping on Cousins if he's got to do a 2-minute drill.
I'm not either, and that's really all we were asking of the Redskins. I mean, we knew that they had a chance, but it was going to be tough based on the way that Dallas has been playing over the past 10 weeks now. But as you said, the Redskins closed the gap and maybe put some doubt in the minds of the Cowboys fans. And guest pickers like ourselves who just feel that this has to end at some point.
And then we capped off Thanksgiving Day with a pretty awful game in Pittsburgh, Indianapolis. I'm not sure who Indianapolis was starting at quarterback. Some Pollock from Wisconsin, I think. Can you say Pollock? Is that offensive? Oh, well.
No.
See, yeah, Pittsburgh looked good, but Indy's nothing without Andrew Luck. So it's just... Yeah,
I have to say that I saw approximately 5 minutes of that game. All I saw really was the final score, and I assume with 28 points on the board that maybe Landry Jones got a little bit of run in there.
I think Landry Jones did get a little bit of play. I was about to actually give you a little message, a little DM there.
Oh yeah,
I saw it happening, but
yeah, I appreciate. I appreciate you not doing that because that I would have had to have rearranged my Thanksgiving plans and gotten to a television as quickly as possible.
Yes,
so I understand. You did the right thing.
Yeah, but yeah, then we get to Sunday, and I think the message of this week, Wes, is we kind of decide status quo. Nothing really changed this week. In the NFL, just kind of the same old, same old. It was a fun week. Like there's some fun games, especially Sunday night. We'll get to that one in a second. But this week just kind of felt like nothing really changed. I think the contenders are still the contenders. I think the Ravens, you know, are still in the driver's seat with the North. Detroit and Green Bay are still going to battle it out for the NFC North. And looks like all the other divisions feel kind of wrapped up at this point.
Yep. Yeah, I have to agree. It was more of the same based on what we've seen. As you said, the teams at the top, like New England and Dallas, Oakland even, continued their winning ways. You had a few maybe surprising results on the surface if you take a look at a Seattle-Tampa Bay game, but that really wasn't a surprise if you looked at what was actually going on going into that game, in my opinion at least. And like you said, no real shifts in the standings. And I don't know about you, but my general impression of most of these teams hasn't changed at all based on what happened this week.
And doesn't the impression kind of feel like – it kind of feels this way in college too. Even the best teams, I don't feel like they're unbeatable. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if Atlanta beat Dallas in a shootout if it got to that. Or I wouldn't be shocked if Oakland beats New England. Like, does it feel like these top two teams in the NFL are world beaters? That's what I'm kind of getting at. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how it feels right now. It feels like parity is strong in the NFL.
It is strong. I have that same feeling. There's no real juggernaut, and even the teams at the top, as you mentioned, are vulnerable to getting beat by other teams of a similar stature, I would say. For example, an Atlanta could sneak in and beat any one of these teams. Even a Denver or somebody like that on any given week could beat New England if it comes down to that. I mean, there isn't a sure bet, which will make for a fun playoffs. I mean, that's what I think we have to look forward to the most right now is regardless who ends up getting in, I think there's going to be – this is the year. If you're going to pick your upsets and put a little money on a long shot, this might not be the worst time to do it.
Yeah, because, I mean, I look at New England banged up, you know, like Gronk, I think he's missing a lung now or something at this point. Not really – I think he's in an iron lung. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. So you got injuries there. Dallas, you got to think Prescott's going to struggle at some point, especially when we get to the playoffs and he's facing some more defenses who have way more film on him and have had, you know, a little bit longer to get ready for him. But you mentioned Denver. And let's jump to Sunday night's game. What I'm calling the greatest football game of all time, especially if you're only watching the fourth quarter in overtime.
Boy, I mean, we all needed our towels that night towards the end there. That was one that went from, let's be honest, that was a pretty vanilla game early on for three quarters, as you alluded to. And then the floodgates opened, and then it went from a fair game to a great game to a legendary game. And by the time it was over with, I mean, I really, if it all would have ended that night, If President-elect Trump would have gotten his hands on the nuclear codes early and he'd have pressed that button, I can't say I would have minded so much. It's going to be tough to improve off of that.
I remember making the comment to somebody, they ended football after that game. I couldn't really complain. I thought it was the best way for things to end. And if you weren't watching, the game ended on a clank field goal that went off the goalpost and ricocheted back in through the goalpost for the win in overtime. It was the
clank heard around the world, as far as I'm concerned. I mean,
I think that's what they're calling it.
It is, yeah. That's how it will go down. And it was one of those. It was one of those moments that solicited a visceral reaction, no matter who you were. If you were watching that, you either said something out loud to nobody in particular. Or you made some sort of noise unheard of in most situations, but that's what it was all about. And it's unfortunate to me too that when the ratings came out for that game, they weren't really wasn't anything that anybody's going to remember in terms of the number. And that's a sad thing because people needed to see this game if they wanted.
Well, I think that's the miracle of social media, though, because that GIF, that Vine was rolling on Twitter of that kick.
Still is.
You had the, I don't know if you saw the picture of the kicker celebrating because he saw it went in and the punter with his head on his helmet. Just
I did.
Devastated. I did.
That's one for the main room in your house or your apartment, yeah, wherever you live at. You throw that one up on the wall, and I only hope that Gary Kubiak's decision to kick a ball 62 yards to try and win the game, which is admirable on some levels, but pretty stupid on about 95% okay, of the other
but
levels.
You know, okay, but you know what? I don't hate this move. Two reasons. A, he wasn't playing for the tie. I respect that. That's what we used to respect, right? Like, if you go for the win, we respect that. But it seems like in this new pussyfoot America, you should have taken the tie. You shouldn't have lost. Like, why? I'd rather lose than tie. Ties are ugly. It looks bad on your standings when you have that extra little one sitting there. Eh.
I'm a fan of
ties, but I don't blame them.
Here's what I'll say. I'm with you on the general sentiment. But I say, if you're going to go big balls in that situation, you go all the way and you just flat out go for it on fourth down, try and pick up the first down.
Well, right? You forget about the elevation in Denver that lets you kick, I think, 100-yard field goals.
Yeah.
It's like a moon situation with Denver because it's elevated.
Well, that is true. And Brandon McManus, they talked about it. I can hit from 60. That's what he's telling Collinsworth, whether he truly believes it or not. So, yes, it was possible, don't get me wrong, but I like the idea, like I said, of going for it on fourth down or just laying a beauty of a punt in there to pin him back, because we were all hoping, like you said, a part of us at least was hoping for that tie, and what would have been better than just a nice, high, tight, deep punt down at a
corner,
two.
Coffin corner kick.
Ooh.
If you will.
Now that would have, I mean, you talk about a visceral reaction. That right mm-hmm. there would have brought me to my knees, to the floor, and I may still be on the ground because we'd be looking at another tie, and there's nothing sweeter these days. Nothing sweeter.
No, you can't beat that. But, all right, so we got through that game. Interesting, you know, we talked about things, but one thing did change. Denver is now on the outside looking into the playoffs. So we're looking at a situation where neither team that went to the Super Bowl last year will go to the playoffs if the season ended today. And I can't remember the last time something like that happened. It's probably more recent, I think, but it feels like it's been a while.
And to me, that again, and this kind of goes to what we were talking about with parity and maybe some upsets, I think it's a good thing. I mean, are you going to be sad if Denver and Carolina aren't in the playoffs at all? I mean,
oh, two of the most boring teams to watch ever? Yeah, exactly. I think of. Yeah,
exactly. Let's get some new blood in there. I mean, the only other the best thing for me that could happen is get Denver out there, and for the love of God, send the Houston Texans home to Houston, not to the Super Bowl, Houston, home to Houston. Keep them out of the playoffs. Get Tennessee in there. Let's spice up the AFC a little bit. And obviously the NFC, I think, is wide open, as you mentioned earlier. So yeah. I'm with you. Let's out with the old and in with the new.
All right, and then finally, if we get done kind of recapping last week, our boy Aaron Rodgers created quite the stir when he went into a tent during the game at Philadelphia, and it leaves me and probably you wondering, what was going on in that tent? Some sort of Scientology ritual? Was he getting his e-meter checked? Was he sacrificing a child? Was he just taking a leak? No one really knows for sure.
I know this is your area of expertise mm-hmm. with your you are a conspiracy man.
Well, I'm a puzzle guy, not a conspiracy. I just put together pieces. I'm a puzzle guy.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. You put the pieces together to create the picture that we need to see. Here's what I did. I did a little bit of research, and I'm going to bring this down a little bit right now. Get serious. I took a look at the date. Is what I took a look at. November 28th. Historical events on November 28th. That was last night, or whenever you're listening to this, that was Monday.
It was Monday night.
Okay. So 2012, 54 people killed, 120 injured in a bomb, car bombing in Syria. Ooh. Aaron Rodgers, perhaps involved, perhaps some sort of remembrance or celebration even of that event. So that's one option. Terrorists, what do you think?
I'm not sold on the terrorism front. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is getting his hands. He's not a getting your hands dirty type of guy. He's not, you know, he's not a elbow grease getting in there and like really killing people guy. But situation where maybe he benefited? Yeah, because, I mean, hasn't he been in some more commercials since 2012?
He sure has. He's been in all of the commercials since 2012. So,
maybe that was part of a sacrifice of Xanadu.
It could very well be. Mm-hmm. I think that's the angle that we take with that theory. Here's theory number two. 1994. Convicted serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer is clubbed to death by an inmate in the Columbia Correctional Institution gymnasium. Aaron Rodgers, serial killer sympathizer, perhaps? What do you think about that?
That's an interesting one. But if he's a serial killer, you think maybe he went to the tent and did a little mourning for one Mr. Dahmer?
You pour one out, if you will. But I think you made a good point on the previous theory in that he's not really a get-your-hands-dirty type of guy. And so serial murder or crimes of that nature, that may be a little bit... I mean, he may be able to sympathize with Mr. Dahmer's plight and what have you, but you may have killed that theory off.
I don't think Aaron Rodgers has the balls to take a man's life in front of him. Now, behind his back, maybe. Well, but I don't trust Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
Yeah. So did behind his back, indeed. That well worded, my friend. I think you know what I'm getting at there. That's another theory about Aaron Rodgers, though. Here's one more for you. 1946, Dutch Nazi Anton Mussert sentenced to death. Aaron Rodgers, Nazi sympathizer. What do you think about that?
Is there a link between all three? Could Aaron Rodgers have been responsible for Nazism, the serial killer boom in the late 70s, 80s, and early 90s, and the rise of ISIS or the Islamic State in the Middle East?
It's possible.
You know, is he a time traveler? Maybe. Maybe that tent, some sort of time traveling device. Because you know what? Before that, I don't remember hearing about Jeffrey Dahmer getting clubbed until he went to this tent Monday night. Maybe he went back in time, oversaw the clubbing.
It's can't possible. Prove it.
He's
either a time traveler or he's a lot older than we think he is.
Maybe like a Benjamin Button scenario.
It could be. Yeah. Could be. I mean, these are just things to play around with. But you're the puzzle guy, like you said, and I just like to throw pieces at you.
I think putting those pieces together, you'd have to think Aaron Rodgers time traveling, and it all fit. You know, all these pieces they point towards one thing, Wes, and that's Illuminati.
Well, that's no laughing matter at all. I chuckled out of fear of the thought. Is what happened.
So
right
has
there.
Aaron Rodgers been using his tent to travel back in time and arrange events so they favor the Illuminati? Maybe. I look at stuff like the Berenstain Bears, you know, conspiracy. Is Aaron Rodgers behind that? Maybe.
Well,
there's a lot of things that point towards Aaron Rodgers and his time traveling tent
causing. And it's so strange because here's a guy who has been marred in some sort of controversy for the past few weeks. We talked about it last week. For those who didn't listen, go back, check it out. It's a must listen piece of audio.
Yeah. Especially through one of Aaron Rodgers' lawyers. Check that out.
Yeah, definitely.
We could use the press.
Get back to Zach personally on that one.
Yeah.
But this is a guy who was struggling week after week. The Packers, they lost three or four straight, and they go into a Monday night game in Philadelphia. We all expect the Eagles to get it done, and it's anything but that. It looks like several years ago when the Packers are on top and Philadelphia is flailing about with Nick Foles or somebody like that at quarterback. So, I mean, I think as ridiculous as some of the things we threw out there might sound, what's more ridiculous than what happened Monday night?
I'm just kind of speechless when I think about all the things that Aaron Rodgers probably has done and all the harm Aaron Rodgers has caused this great earth.
What do you think he's doing right now? What do you think Aaron Rodgers is up to at this
point? It wouldn't shock me if he's back in time helping who knows? I mean, you know what? I bet he's back in time helping the Dutch with the slave trade. Wouldn't shock me.
Well, that's heavy. That's heavy. Yeah. I bet he's hanging out with Jordy Nelson or something like that. But you know, speaking of Aaron Rodgers,
that's crazy, Wes. Please speak normal.
Hey, I got something for you, real quick. We're going to do this quickly because I want to catch you off the top of the head. I think that's where you're at your best. I mean, there's nothing better than a man's intense, instinctive reaction. So let's do a little West Coast Wes. Word association, shall we? Are you ready for this?
Ready, okay, yeah. I'm in the zone.
10 quarterbacks that I've got listed right here. And I want you, you know, it could be one word, it could be a couple words, whatever comes to mind. So let's just rattle these off here, Power Hour style. All right. First one, Dak Prescott.
Club LaVilla.
Good start. Marcus Mariota.
Next big thing.
Okay. Matt Ryan.
Choke.
Did not expect
But not that. His fault. Someone else made him choke, if I can expand on that. Like, someone stuck food down his throat and wouldn't let him cough it out. Because they said that's a bad idea. Don't cough out food. Just, that was Mike Smith. So.
Okay. Good to clarify that.
Thank you. Yeah.
All right. Derek Carr.
Bad little brother.
Ooh. All right. Trevor Siemian.
Get a Kleenex for that.
Let's see where you're headed with that. Landry Jones.
God tier.
Yes, sir. Aaron Rodgers.
One of history's greatest monsters.
Okay. Carson Wentz.
Pipeline. I know it's North Dakota, but North Dakota.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Jared Goff.
Gonna be a golf instructor in 5 years. That's a bad one. Jared, get out to the golf course is more like it. There we go.
I hear you, brother. All right. And I was gonna go. Well, let's do two more. Let's do the last one.
Okay.
Let's do. Here's Jay Cutler.
Jet.
Nice. And here's the bonus one. Just thought I'd throw it out there. Riley Cooper.
Donald Trump.
All right, I was going to say hero, but I think.
Well, I mean, Trump's kind of a hero too. He's proof that if your dad's a millionaire, that you can do anything. So good for him. If you're a rich white male, you can still do something in this country, and that's what Trump is. Guys like Trump and Cooper have showed us.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
All right, I got an award association for you, Wes.
Okay, fire away.
All right, you ready? Michael Vick.
Hero.
Matt Flynn.
Rich.
Russell Wilson.
Sex.
Cordell Stewart.
Sex.
And finally, cheers. My boy, Ray Carruth.
Mm.
Former murderer.
Misunderstood. Yeah.
Thank you. People forget Ray Carruth. I'm trying to clear Ray Carruth's good name. On this
one. Well, I mean,
he just tried to kill the mother of his children and did.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, you find plenty of things in trunks of cars, and you shouldn't be looking there in the first place. It's not your problem.
Exactly. So. Don't look where you're not supposed to. Let's move on. Next week, we've got a fun week. I mean, any time that you cap off the week with Indianapolis and the New York Jets playing each other, you know it's going to be a fun week for football. We kick things off, though, Thursday in a must-win game for Minnesota as they host Dallas. Dallas, 3.5-point favorites. I think Vegas is kind of agreeing with me, too. Minnesota might win this game because they kind of have to if they're going to stay alive.
Vegas is definitely on the same page that we are because that spread keeps shrinking over and over again. It's just a matter of time. That's the theme of this. The Dallas Cowboys, just a matter of time. Maybe good, maybe bad. I mean, not after what I saw against the Lions. I'm still picking Dallas. I just have to do it.
I'm interested to see this game because I think this is the best secondary unit or best, you know, coverage that Dak Prescott's going to really run into, especially so far this year. I think Minnesota gets killed because their front seven's still so banged up, and that Elliott's really good, and so is that Dallas O-line. I'm going to take Dallas, but I don't feel super confident. Minnesota's, they're a rabid animal. You get a rabid animal back against the wall, they're going to start biting you. That's what,
that is what we've been taught and some of us have experienced. But the good news is that we actually have a game on Thursday night that has, I mean, there's a good amount of intrigue here and it'll probably do the ratings. That'll be the peak so far this year on Thursday.
And both these teams will have a whole week to get rested because both played on Thanksgiving. So that's kind of a little interesting twist.
That's true. Good point.
Yeah. Let's move on to a playoff rematch from 1998. Denver-Jacksonville. Denver favored by 5. I think Jacksonville wins. I think the sail kind of, the wind kind of came out of their sails last week, and I think it's done. I think Denver's going to go on a good losing skid here and not be a playoff team. And I think they're going to blow one to Jacksonville. And you're going out east. That's weird.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm thinking late night for the Denver Broncos on Sunday night. And it comes – I mean, we were all elated watching that game. But imagine being a Denver fan. That had to be soul-crushing. And so and that goes for the players as well, obviously. So yeah. You take that. You add in a trip out to Jacksonville. God knows what could happen if they get to that area early and what they might get themselves involved with. So yeah. All
you can have a meth lab explode.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, you want to talk about puzzle pieces, we could throw out the nastiest ones, and they wouldn't be out of the question in this situation. But that said, I'm going to take Denver by a field goal here still, just because I just...
So, but you like Jacksonville catching five, then?
Yeah, definitely. Like definitely. Not a win, though. I can't commit to the win, but
Let's go on to... Pretty, I think, a kind of a big matchup, low key. Kansas City and their great defense going up against Atlanta. Atlanta, a 4-point favorite, coming off a pretty dominating win of Arizona last week, which has a really good defense. As bad as they've struggled on offense, that defense is still top five, I think, in the NFL. So this should be an interesting matchup. Atlanta, like I said, is favored by 4. It's hard for me to pick my team because I know we're going to lose, but I like Atlanta to win. I think that offense gets things done, and Kansas City can't play catch up.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on this. I like Atlanta. I like Atlanta comfortably. Mm-hmm. I just think that it was a good sign, as you said. I mean, Atlanta can light anybody up. That's what's been proven throughout this year. And
when you go to Seattle on the road and you still don't really lose a beat throwing the ball necessarily. And you know, if the refs don't screw you over in that game, and you know, you win, people forget that.
Hey, what I don't forget about that is what Atlanta did in the third quarter. That's what they're capable of doing to anybody. It doesn't take much time at all, and all of a sudden you're underwater.
No, and you have the emergence of Gabriel as kind of your third, fourth big threat there on the offense, and he's looking pretty good. I think that's what four touchdowns in his last three games. Not too bad.
Yep. He's on fire. So you couple that with Kansas City coming off an emotional high, which, I mean, again, there's got to be some drop-off after what they experienced. I'll definitely take the Falcons. I'll go by 10.
Ooh. All right. I'm really interested in this one. Doesn't feel as marquee, but it is to me. Detroit, New Orleans. Actually, two of the better quarterbacks in the NFC right now. New Orleans, 6-point favorite. In New Orleans.
Well, I know one thing. I'm betting the over on that one. Yeah. I like points in this game.
Over sitting about 53. So that could this could easily be 33 to 31. This could easily be 60 point.
That's definitely not out of the question at all. I would expect it. I'll go with the same. Picking Detroit 2 weeks in a row for me, and I didn't pick them last week, but I them winning twice in a row, step forward, step back with the Lions for me, and I'll take the Saints to keep it interesting in that division, even though I think Atlanta's clearly the class of the division. I'll go with the Saints here,
I like the Saints, too. They tore up a really good Rams defense last week, and, I mean, they ran and threw all over them. It was bad. This is going to be a fun game. This is one I'd circle to watch at one. This is going to be a red zone fun game. It's going to be a fun ending to this one, I feel like. Let's move on. Miami-Baltimore. Baltimore, 3.5-point favorite. This is kind of a big game for Miami. Kind of keep their standings in the wild card race going, especially if Denver does beat Jacksonville. Miami kind of has to win this one here. But Baltimore looking pretty good right now.
Both these teams have momentum to some degree. Yeah. I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong on this. With all that said, with all that's on the line, and with how well both of these teams are playing, it just seems kind of like an ugly matchup to some degree. Am I off? Is it just me in this situation? Or is Dolphins, Ravens?
Well, I think even if it was a non-football matchup and a Dolphins fighting a Raven, that's not really a matchup you want to – that's not an animal fight you want to watch. And I think a lot of times with NFL games, you got to look at the mascots and see if they pair up well fighting each other. Because, I mean, Redskins, Cowboys, bam, you know, who doesn't love genocide? you know, Lions-Vikings, a Viking fighting a lion. That's pretty cool. Packers-Bears, you know, industrialization versus Mother Nature. That's kind of capitalism versus communism, kind of Russia versus America there with Packers-Bears. This match, yeah, I don't really love it. Both quarterbacks suck. It feels like a defensive battle. I mean, the over-under is sitting at about 40.5. I still like the under. That's a super low over-under.
I agree with you. Well, on a side note, I mean, this was always going to be the genocide podcast until we got away from it. But then let's just, I would say, stay tuned to all the listeners out there as far as that goes. As far as this game, you make a good point about the mascots. And I always say this about the mascot battle. Where's this battle taking place? That's what this depends on.
And it would be
in
Baltimore, which would be in the at the Nest. Yes.
So this is taking place in the Nest or in the air, if you will. I mean, that clearly favors a Raven. If this thing's going down in the water, maybe you take the Dolphins. Yeah. But this week, since it's at Baltimore, I'll go with the Ravens.
Yeah. And I think the Ravens, you know, win and avenge Fidel Castro against the people of Miami.
Oh, wow. We didn't even mention.
Yeah, we probably should.
I think the less. Yeah. What do you have anything really? I mean, I think a moment of silence might be nice.
Yeah, I think classy guy. Only, you know what? Only lobotomized gay people. I mean, so that's a step up from American ally Saudi Arabia, who beheads gay people. Yeah. So there you go. So
you feel like if you're going, I mean, really, if it was Trump Castro, does that really put any more fear in your heart than Trump Pence? Considering what you just said?
No, at least Castro is going to give me health care. You know, I'll take that, you know. Castro's biggest critics are illegal aliens from Cuba. So I'm not going to listen to a bunch of criminals tell me what's going on. So
I think the point is Power Hour pro-Castro.
Yeah, Power Hour is firmly sponsored by the People's Working Party. we're big Stalin guys here. Don't tell Coughlin that. let's move on. 4:00. It's not going to be your prettiest slate. But there is one game I'm interested at 4. Tampa Bay, San Diego. Over-under sitting at about 48. San Diego, 4-point favorite. I love this game. On paper, this should be a fun, high-scoring game. I think Tampa Bay wins, even though they're not favored. Tampa Bay's probably – they might be the hottest team in football right now that no one's talking about.
Yeah, I agree with you first and foremost. I think Tampa takes this. They impressed me just watching them last week in terms of the fire that they have on defense. And obviously, I mean, nobody's sung the praises of Mike Evans more than you have. And I was a believer after what I saw. But that over-under is criminally low. Yeah. I mean, this is the type of game where if it goes the way that I think it can, we're talking about a game that's a shootout in the 40s. We're talking about a game where we're combining for maybe 100 points.
This could be Pitt-Syracuse level of score.
This
could be 87-72.
This could. This could be, what, Cleveland-Cincinnati from a couple of years ago?
Three
years ago. I mean, this is what – this has that potential. And I think it's the game to circle that maybe is under the radar for most NFL
fans. Yeah, this is the game I'd flip to. But my main game at 4, you got the Giants going to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh favored by 6.5. I like the Giants here. I'm not sold. I love Pittsburgh's offense, but I'm not sold on Pittsburgh as a decent team. The Giants are one of the better teams in the NFC right now. Another team no one's really talking about that's playing really good ball.
They are. They're flying under the radar, and they still have themselves in a very nice position. It's just, you know, Dallas has taken all the spotlight from that division, and it even seems like the Redskins and earlier the Eagles were being talked about more than the Giants. But I'm with you because as we've talked about on this podcast several times, Pittsburgh, it just doesn't seem like the stars are aligning this year. They're never all completely healthy at the same time, and even when they are, they're not on the same page. They went away from Landry Jones. I mean, I can't beat that dead horse enough.
No.
So I'm going to go with you and the Giants in this one.
Yeah, and I like this one to be a shootout, too. Over-under sitting at 48.5, 49. I think we have three good games for potential to hit the over pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that don't be fooled by Pittsburgh only giving up 7 points to the Colts, because as you said, there was Pollock at the
end. Yeah, there was a Pollock. Anytime there's a Pollock at quarterback, you don't need that. Yeah, that's proven.
Forget about it. So let's do it. Let's go with two games. And what's the third? Let's see. Buffalo at Oakland. That there might be some points.
Yeah, I like Tampa Bay, San Diego, Detroit, New Orleans, and then Pittsburgh Giants. I'd parlay that. Take all the overs. See what happens.
Get rich. Yeah, that's what I.
Yeah, I'd put the mortgage. I'd say, you know what, you're saving up for grandma's surgery. Take all that money. Put it on that parlay. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
And if you can't afford it, grandma's going to die anyway. So, you know.
That's just the truth.
Yeah, they'll live forever.
The way it is.
But there is one game where I will tell you to take the under. Carolina going to Seattle. Over-unders 44.5. Seattle, 6.5-point favorite. I like Seattle to win, but this one's going to be ugly.
It sure is.
Yeah, like,
let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Let's just talk about Seattle a little bit. Let me give a smile and a frown for Seattle's fan, both of them. What you saw last week against the Buccaneers, just throw that out the window for the most part, because they were missing, what, 7 starters?
Yeah.
And any time that they're depleted on the offensive line, it's not going to go well, because they're inherently depleted on the offensive line. And so just throw it out the window. Don't worry about the Seahawks. They'll make their way into the playoffs. That being said, don't like their outlook when it comes to the playoffs. I just don't think they have. Anytime you're that weak, and I mean this is historically weak at a particular unit of such importance, don't bet on Seattle. And certainly in this game, with a team like Carolina coming into town, I mean, this is a matchup that would have had all sorts of fireworks 2 years ago, or even last year. No, maybe.
If this was like the NFC Championship or something, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, precisely. But this year, I mean, I'm looking at like a 17-13 type of ball game or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, I expect a lot of field goals, punts, and probably like a safety or something weird. But as a guy who doesn't mind defensive football, I think this might be a fun game to watch defensively. Kind of like KC Denver was, like, not super exciting, but there are little things to watch. Like, you know, you've got Justin Houston, you know, was going crazy on Sunday night. This could be an interesting game. So I'm going to watch it Sunday night for sure.
Yeah, I'll be there, obviously. But I think what it does have is there are characters in this game, mm-hmm. and you can always get behind characters. But what, remind me of that spread again.
Seattle 6.5.
Mm. I'll tell you what, I like Seattle to win, but I only like it, like I said, by about 4. So that's where my money goes.
Ooh, I'm taking Seattle. I think they win by a touchdown or not. I think Carolina's done. I think they know it. If I'm on Carolina, I kind of start rest. Maybe I, like, you know, pull a hammy accidentally or something. You know, get hurt in the shower.
Oh yeah.
And just start get ready for next year if you're Carolina, and like go try to get a good receiver, because Cam Newton just can't carry that team anymore. And I don't blame him. He's too banged up.
Exactly. If I'm Cam at this point, I swallow the pride, and you know, I quote unquote start to feel that hip start to act up a little bit. Get off the field. Get yourself into the off season, and let's do it again next year. When for the love of God, he's not being headhunted week after week and getting killed out there.
All right, and then finally, let's go to Monday night. Andrew Luck should be back in this game, so we'll have Andrew Luck versus. I'm not sure for the Jets. Fitzpatrick? Hackenberg? The other guy whose name I don't remember, because he's going to be gone after the season. It's kind of a pick 'em. Andy 1.5-point favorite. I think the real winner here is obviously the fans. And I like the under here actually a lot. 49.5. I doubt both these teams can score 40 points combined.
That's higher than I thought.
Yeah.
Given that it's like you said, Mark Sanchez or whoever's playing QB for the Jets. I will tell you this much. When it comes to all of the games right now and ticket availability, there's only one game that's over 10,000 tickets available, according to ESPN, and that would be this one, my friend. 11,184 tickets available from $9. I mean, is this game worth $9? Would you spend the $9 if you lived a block away from East Rutherford? Would you make the walk?
And if I lived a block away from East Rutherford, I'm not sure I could afford the $9 to go to the game.
That's true.
Ooh, a little New Jersey smack talk there.
Yeah.
Mamma mia. Yeah. From New Jersey.
That's a good one. I mean, can we get a Richard Nixon impersonation?
Famous New Jerseyan. He's from California. Haru, the Jets suck. That would be mine.
Say no more. Say no more. I'm taking the Colts.
Yeah, I like the Colts here, too. All right, that's it for NFL talk. There's one last thing I want to talk about with Wes. Your boys.
Yeah, what could that be?
The University of Washington are heading to Pasadena. Where they play this game?
Santa Clara.
Same thing, yeah. Close California. Yeah. It's not a very big state. I'm going to play Colorado. Pac-12 championship. Playoff spot on the line for Washington. Do they get it done against a kind of a good Colorado team?
Okay. This is a refreshing matchup, I think you have to say. Let's just talk about the Pac-12. I mean, this harkens back to the early 90s or whenever it was when these teams were battling in Rose Bowl, situations of that nature. So I think that's a win for the world, really. Whether anybody watches out east or not is another question. This one, though, might get some viewers because it's on a Friday night for some godforsaken reason.
I like the Friday night move for the – I think you don't kind of get lost in the shuffle with that ACC champ. I mean, anytime Clemson and Vatek play, the nation's going to be glued, you know. So I kind of get it, you know.
I didn't think of that. I didn't think of that. And you know what, man? The Friday night thing is not a big deal to me at all because the Huskies played on Friday the previous week. So it's a short week for Colorado, if nothing else. But, hey, on no rest, I haven't felt more confident about a Washington game since, you know, a big Washington game all season. I thought we were going to lose to USC, or I thought it would be very close. I was worried about that. I didn't know that we'd waltz into Oregon and beat them down by 40 and put up 70 points on them. I thought the Stanford game, like everybody else, thought the Stanford game was a toss-up, basically. This one, though, everything I've seen from Colorado, they are a good team, and they're on the rise, and their coach is the coach of the year in the Pac-12. I agree with that 100% based on what he's done this year. But Colorado, I mean, they have a quarterback who's mobile. Seth Olufau is the name. Remember that. He is mobile. He's a tough guy.
It's Samoan?
But I've watched him throw the – he is Samoan, no, so you know what that means. I mean, there's no killing the man.
Yeah.
But that being said, you can rough him up. I have seen him roughed up. He'll get up every time. You slow him down, and you make him throw the ball because he's just not that accurate. He's putting balls all over the places. Colorado's strength, I think, has to do with their defense more so and their secondary. And they do have a good secondary, but nobody's been able to stop Washington this year. I like Washington big, and I may be a homer here, but it's about time I really put my foot down and said, this is the team that everybody thinks they are. This is the number 4 team in the nation. This is a team who I think can compete with anybody. I watch Ohio State and Michigan this week. Fun game, don't get me wrong. Great atmosphere. I'm not scared. I'm not scared of the Buckeyes or the Wolverines when it comes to the Huskies.
So bring on Alabama. That's what you're saying.
Bring them on. Absolutely. Because here's the thing here. You give Chris Peterson a month to prepare. He's shown in the past he can do great things with that month. So I fear nobody, especially not the Buffaloes in this situation. I like Washington by 15,
Ooh.
And I like an early, and get out early. What did everybody say about the Cougars last week, Washington State? And I was with you. I thought it was going to be another great game, and we waltzed in there, and it was like nothing. It was a special education team. Again, I'm sorry, that's not a good thing to say.
Retarded.
There you go. That's what I'm getting at. I like the Huskies big, but I know you don't feel the same way, and I respect that.
Well, as someone who hasn't watched a minute of Colorado football this year, but I hear they're really good. They beat Utah, I believe, last week. Is that their big rival?
Yeah. Yes, at home.
Yeah.
It took everything they had, and Utah's a solid team. But
no, I do really like Utah. I guess got a chaotic feeling about this weekend, and I'll get into that more with some of my other when we get to more previews. I don't hate Colorado catching 7.5. I don't know if I like them to win, and you've kind of got me fired up about UW now. But you getting really excited kind of makes me think UW is going to blow it. So I like Colorado catching 7.5, mostly because you're really excited about it, Wes. And that anytime someone's confident, I always think something might go wrong.
I know how you feel. I think. And to me, it's like I want to fake like I'm not confident. I want to be the guy, oh, you know, I don't know about this. they're a solid team, and I want to temper my expectations. But I can't. I have to be honest with our listeners. That's all I ever try to do. That's all we do here.
Yeah, just
and
pure
I just
honesty.
Can't help but be confident. I just feel the Huskies this year. I feel them going all the way to the playoffs. And
well, there we go.
Happens there, but I like them Friday. That's for damn sure.
All right. Well, there we go. Well, that was the NFL roundup, and we'll catch you next week with actually. This show is going to be little side note for next week, because college football has one game and we will devote an hour to Army Navy, but a little bit longer edition and then a NFL roundup next week. Expand a little expansion pack, if you will, to extend the show. So we're going to really get into the NFL next week, Wes. So get excited.
Let's go deep.
Let's do it. All right. Back to you, Dan, and me. And we're back. So that was quite the NFL roundup. And expect Aaron Rodgers to sue this podcast soon. all right. But before we move on, Wes gave his thoughts on the Pac-12 championship. He really likes Washington. I don't like his confidence, so I went with Colorado. Who do you like here, Dan?
I like Washington. Me and Wes, we think alike on this thing. I think they're going to kill him.
Yeah.
I believed really strongly in Washington State this past week. I was like, man, they Mike Leach, Apple Cup, you know, boom, 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 and then that game was over in like 5 minutes. I mean, I think it was like 28-0 before the first quarter ended. It's just like, you know what? Nobody in the Pac-12 is going to beat Washington besides USC. That was it.
All right, so that game's on Friday, and then but before that, we have the MAC Championship as Ohio and Western Michigan square off. Western Michigan, 18-point favorite. They should blow them out from what I've seen. Western Michigan looks good. They're ready. I think they finished the year undefeated. I think they win their bowl game, too. I don't know who they're playing, but I like their
game. Yeah, the level of talent difference between Western Michigan and the rest of that conference. Like, it's just not – like, you're not even talking – like, they're barely even playing the same sport.
Yeah.
Like, Western Michigan has recruited consistently under PJ Fleck. They've recruited in, like, the top 50, which, okay, they're not going to beat Alabama tomorrow, but the average MAC school recruits in, like, the 80s and 90s. Like, we're basically talking about, like, a bad SEC team, recruiting-wise, playing in a conference full of, like, sub-FCS teams.
No, if you stuck Mississippi State and the MAC, they probably do pretty well.
Yeah,
I think
and that's basically
fair.
What Western Michigan is, based on the talent he's been able to recruit. So it's just his recruiting ability is exceptional. I'm still not sold on him as a head coach because if you threw PJ Fleck into a big recruiting conference where everybody recruits, I'm not really sure about his other skills as a coach. I just know he can recruit.
I think we'll see because he's probably about to get the big step to Oregon. The Big 12, Big 10, whatever we call it these days, the big, the southern one.
I call it the Big 8 still.
Yeah.
Because if their number's not going to match the number of schools, then I'm just going to call them the Big 8 anyway. Yeah.
But they don't really have a championship game, but Oklahoma State has turned into a de facto championship game. Oklahoma's a double-digit favorite, about 11 or 12.
That's crazy.
Does Oklahoma State really have a chance, though, in this game?
I think Oklahoma State will beat them. Like, I'm not beyond just a chance. I think they're a better team.
So I don't really understand that line.
I got Oklahoma State there. I think Oklahoma State wins the conference. I mean, Oklahoma has gotten shredded by every good team they've played. And that's true. There's two good teams in the Big 12, and they're now finally playing each other.
Yeah. No, but that should be a fun one to watch. But also at noon, we'll have the American Championship game, and that's going to be Temple Navy. Navy favored by a field goal.
Yeah, I mean, Navy, I mean, I touched on it earlier when I talked about the Navy-SMU game.
Oh.
Navy's offense has just been on fire.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go with Navy there. I just don't – I mean, Temple's got a good defensive coaching staff. Matt Rule, that's another guy that you have to pencil in. For a big job upgrade soon.
Yeah.
But
I think I look at Navy, but I look at Navy right now, and it doesn't make sense. Just roll with my scenario. If this was a March Madness type scenario, I would look at Navy to be like that surprise team that goes to the Sweet 16 or Elite 8. Like, they're pretty hot right now. right? Like they're making things work. So would you say they're one of the hottest teams in the nation, especially offensively, Navy?
Yep, definitely. I mean, they've been exceedingly good, and they've just been shredding Bull. Like it's just kind of ridiculous how good they've been. So, yeah.
All right. But then we move on to CBS, 4:00 in Atlanta, Florida, Alabama. Florida, 24-point favorite. It could be double that for Alabama, Florida. This one's going to be.
Does Florida score a point? That's the question. Like, that's what I'm more interested in. Not whether they're going to, like, because they're not going to, like, Alabama's going to cover.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, do I think Alabama's going to cover that 20? No. That's a given. Does Florida score anything?
Yeah, this one's going to get ugly, I think, real fast. But if you're Florida, think in your head you might have a chance. What does Florida? What has to happen for Florida to get off this giant upset? Like, would it just to turn over century? Like, the defense would have to make plays for Florida, right? It would have to happen, and then just a complete shutdown of the Alabama offense somehow.
The only way Florida could have a shot is if they redo what LSU did and then get luck. Because LSU got none of the lucky breaks that if you're going to play that, hey, we're going to try to beat Alabama 6-3. You've got to get some breaks to go your way, turnover wise, referee wise. Basically, you got to have what Ohio State needed to upset Michigan. You basically just got to have every break go your way because you're not going to score on them. And Florida's going to need every single break, and their defense is going to have to be Herculean. And I don't know if Florida's defense is on the level of like LSU's and Michigan, Ohio State's. Like, they're not. Their defense isn't that good. Their defense is helped greatly by them being in the SEC.
Yeah. So we both. Yeah, we both like Alabama there. And then we're going to move out west to the Mountain West Conference Championship game. San Diego State, Wyoming. San Diego State, touchdown favorite. And I like San Diego State's been pretty solid all year. I like what's happening at Wyoming, though. Yeah.
But Wyoming, I'm going to go with Wyoming just because I like them, which that's not perfect, but I don't care. Yeah. I love Craig Bohl. He is the mastermind who started the North Dakota State program back up and, you know, put them on their road to success that they now sit on. North Dakota State is one of the biggest, I'd say it's like one of the biggest dynasties in college football history at the FCS level. And he's the one who built that team. He took over Wyoming. They have never been any good at Wyoming. I think in the 80s, they had like a triple option offense that worked out pretty good. But you're talking about one of the biggest disaster programs in the country, and here he has them. You know, I think it's like year 3 or 4. He's got him out here playing for a Mountain West championship. So Craig Bohl, sympathetic favorite of mine. I hope he does it.
Yeah, maybe one to watch because I think this next one's going to be pretty ugly. Virginia Tech, Clemson. Clemson's a 10-point favorite, and I think Clemson's kind of rolling right now. Especially if it lost to Pitt, it seems like they've kind of figured out what wasn't working. And I think I like them to win by a couple of touchdowns here. And I think that rest, that month off, is really going to help Clemson, especially one Mr. Deshaun Watson, when they get to the playoffs.
Yeah, Clemson was one of those teams that had sort of been sleepwalking all year. And you were sort of going like, man, you know, this is they're kind of like that Florida State Jameis Winston, that last Jameis Winston team. What the hell? And then the Pitt loss happened, and it just like it all clicked. And it's like, yeah, oh, yeah, we're Clemson. And they have just been bodying people ever since. Yeah. So Virginia Tech's got a good team. Fuente's a good coach. But they're a year or two away from really being able to challenge Clemson. To be able to beat Clemson at if Clemson played like ass, like they, I mean, Clemson did almost lose the state, but they're not that's in the rearview mirror. You know, they haven't been that team for a while. So, you know, Virginia Tech, I don't think they're good enough to beat Clemson at their best.
Yeah, I like Clemson here.
I think this will be a close game for the first quarter, though.
Yeah.
And then as soon as one thing goes wrong and it's like, oh, shit, they're up by 10, we're dead. Yep.
And then finally, we'll cap off the night with Penn State, Wisconsin. Wisconsin opening up at a 2-point favorite, but this will probably go down to a pick 'em or 1.5 points.
Yeah, it seems crazy for Wisconsin to be favored there.
Yeah, but I do like Wisconsin to win here. Wisconsin has been a team I've really liked all year. They played a lot of good teams close. Now Penn State does have a good win, but so does Wisconsin. Penn State's is obviously a little bit better, but I think Wisconsin gets it done. That's what I think it comes down to.
Trace McSorley has been one of the best quarterbacks in the country since the Michigan. In fact, there's some stat things where he has literally been the best. He is averaging more yards per completion. Now, that's not the stat everybody quotes. It's not the better stat everybody usually does is yards per attempt. But his yards per, like, when Trace McSorley hits a pass, oh, God, it's a big one. Mm-hmm. You know, he moves the ball downfield. You know, they got a high octane offense with him. So, you know, he's a better quarterback than either of the two. You know, Wisconsin beat LSU. They lost by one score to Michigan. They lost by one score to Ohio State. Trace McSorley's a better quarterback than any of those three schools have. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I'd take Penn State there.
Yeah, I'd like Wisconsin to close things out.
It's in a dome. It's in the
Indianapolis, yeah.
Dome. So I think that helps Lucas Penn Oil, State too.
Or yeah.
I think Penn State's, you know, going to be willing to turn up the tempo a little bit. They go no huddle, but they don't really push the tempo. They're one of those teams that just like lines up with like 25 seconds and then lets it run. But I think they can get on that track meet.
Yeah.
The stadium favors them over Wisconsin.
And I would look at this to be probably the best game of the weekend right here.
I would say this is the most evenly matched.
Yeah, exactly. Right behind Temple Navy will be fun, but this is going to be much bigger, much more important football.
I would say Oklahoma State, that'll be a more closely matched game. It's just Alabama's just, I mean, we might as well give an Alabama a bye week. I mean, that's the nature of the SEC. They were going to. Whoever won that piece of shit division was just going to be sacrificed at an altar. So
honestly, the only team I would even like to, it sounds weird saying it, but the only team I really like having a chance against Alabama from the East would probably be a team like Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt might be Kentucky right now. Kentucky's been so much better over the last few weeks. Like, man, maybe Kentucky could give them a run.
Yeah.
Probably better than Florida. I mean, damn. Yeah.
But Dan, as we look ahead to next week, a little low on football, but we do have one big game. Maybe one of the, you know what, one of the coolest things in college football. I think if you're not thinking politics or your opinions on things, Army-Navy is a really cool tradition that we have, and one of those things that makes college football really special.
I'm looking forward to that game, the week after the conference championship. And the best thing about that game is that it's over in like an hour and a half because they both run the option.
Yeah.
So it's not like one of those awful Big 12 games where both teams are going to throw the ball 60 times and the clock's going to stop after every play.
Yeah.
Nah. This thing's going to be over with.
No, and this year Army, a little bit better. I don't think they beat Navy, but I think Army's going to get, I mean, this rivalry is really big for both these schools. So Army's going to bring their A game. This is their championship.
You almost feel like an idiot saying this because Navy's beat them like 12 years in a row or whatever. But that game's always close because they both run the same offense, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Army usually defends them a little bit better than, you know, a lot of teams, even teams with much more talent, just because, well, they're used to running. They're used to seeing that every day. So, you know, Army has played them close even when Army's had bad teams that, you know, finished with like 2 or 3 wins. So, you know, Army's due at some point, right? Like, Army has to beat them someday.
Yeah. So it's kind of how me and Westville and the Cowboys having to lose at some point. It's just bound to happen. But that's, you know, looking ahead, that's going to be our big preview for next week. We're going to recap all the big conference championship games and get ready for bowl season.
Some more coaches will get fired and some more coaches will get hired. Now, like, the Florida Atlantic job is open and a lot of assistant coaches are wanting that job. You know, be able to coach there in South Florida in an easy conference.
Yeah.
The Georgia State job is open.
So, Dan, but next week I want you to go and get your bowling shoes because we're going to go bowling.
Oh, we are.
In a couple of weeks. You go ahead and get go ahead and get things ready, because it's almost bowl season, and I think this is you, and this is probably your favorite time of the year.
You don't want to go bowling. You won't like what happens. Can we talk about how great a bowler I am?
We can do that off air.
Okay.
Off air. Or on the bowling.
That's off the air. That's an off the air conversation.
We'll save the bowling talk for February when the bowling season really, the PBR, I believe, or whatever it's called, PBA. Really kicks off. PBA. Is Pete Weber still bowling? That was my boy.
Well, basically, okay. I know you wanted to wrap us up, but the PBA ESPN telecast basically redid all of their television broadcasts so that Pete Weber could still be relevant. They moved to this team format because guys like Pete, when bowling first got really popular on television, all those guys now are too old to cut it, but they're still the personalities people have heard of. So they came up with this team format, so like him and Norm Duke and Walter Williams, so that they can still be relevant and they can still play and just be on a team with the young, boring bowlers nobody gives a shit about.
All right, so there you go. And look out for future Power Hour guest, Pete Weber, coming soon. Yep. I think we can get him, Dan. I think he'll come on. There you go, PDW.
What else is PDW going to be doing?
probably fixing the wheels on his house.
Look, that guy's got way too much. Well, I mean, he probably does live in an RV.
He probably blew it.
Chris Barnes just lives in one of those tiny houses.
But Dan, as we wrap up this wonderful edition of the Power Hour, any last things you want to, anything you want to get off your chest or anything crazy? Just get nuts.
More nuts than my bowling talk?
Yes.
Look. My peak score I'm bragging, but my peak role was, I think I topped out at 205 when I really had that strike ball going. Former guest of the show, Cam Kleinard, I did once see him bowl. While I was there, he bowled like a 280.
There you go.
He's recording.
So there you
Cam
go.
Kleinard
so
could beat you at bowling. Like, I don't care who you are listening to this. Cam Kleinard's a better bowler.
What if Pete Weber's listening?
Pete Weber is probably not as good a bowler as Cam at this point.
Well, there we go. I think we have our first challenge laid down for the Power Hour. But that's it for me. I'm just looking forward to more great football. This is one of my favorite times of year with the holidays and family and the weather changing. It's just really nice. And to have football there just makes December a really fun month. So I'm really looking forward to this next month of football.
It's the most
and talking about it with time. You, you know, and talking about it with you, Dan. You can't beat that.
I shouldn't have said that. That might get me in trouble with somebody. But it's true, damn it.
Thank you. All right. So, you ready to get out of here?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
You know what? Let's kick it over to Jason. Let him play that.
I'll play us out, Jason.